Hello and welcome to Pancreas Pals. I'm Emily. In this season, we will be having a rotating roster of co-hosts. No matter who's sitting beside me in the hosting chair, we're still just two people trying to live our best diabetic lives. Every week, we'll tackle a new topic from the diabetic perspective. Although we may offer tips and tricks, we are not medical professionals. However, we offer anecdotes and general thoughts on how to embrace a type 1 lifestyle on your own terms. It's not easy to do with all of the literal highs and lows, but it does help to have a pancreas pal to turn to. Hey guys, welcome to Pancreas Pals. Emily here, and this week's special guest is none other than a fan fave, Miriam Brand. Hey Miriam.
Hey, glad to be back as always.
And while we miss you, Christy, we are pumped to have Miriam here as well. And this week's episode, which Miriam, as my unofficial diabetic older sister, can discuss.
I love that title.
Elizabeth, if you're listening, you have a working pancreas, so you're still my older sister, don't worry. But we're going to talk about traveling alone with diabetes. And this is something that is very much on my radar right now because I'm about to go on my first solo work trip to Graceland to cover a wedding chapel there for work. Spoiler alert, and if any of you follow the magazine I work for, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that, whatevs. But yeah, it's gonna be my first solo travel, like staying in a hotel alone by myself. Usually I have a twin sister with me. Shout out to Laura. You rock, don't ever change. But yeah, so for those of you that are diabetic and don't have a twin, you're probably like, oh, I do this all the time. This is chill. Or if you are also kind of a little bit apprehensive about traveling alone, this episode's for you. But yeah, so Miriam, you've traveled alone before, right?
Yes. Yes. And so when you brought up this topic, I kind of told Emily beforehand, I have so many questions and thoughts, but I'm waiting for the podcast so we can have live reactions. But for me, you know, traveling is, I'm an anxious traveler in general, but not necessarily because of diabetes. So that's why I'm very curious to kind of hear what particularly is making you anxious about this trip. Which aspects? Is it the preparation, or is it the total logistics of traveling, or is it being somewhere alone? I kind of want to get a better sense of what is making you anxious. Yeah,
you're not going to charge me for the session, right?
This is completely pro bono, so you're good.
Truly blessed. So I travel a lot with my family. I went to school in Boston, and I'm originally from Florida. I'm kind of a pro at traveling, and I've traveled alone before in terms of actual logistics, like getting mm-hmm. to the airport, going through security alone, boarding mm-hmm. the plane, all that. But I always end up going to, you know, like, in, I end up being surrounded by people where I go. So, like, whether mm-hmm. it was my dorm at Boston or, you know, I'm going to visit friends somewhere in a different city. So for me, the most anxiety I have is centered around the fact that I'm going to be staying in a hotel room alone. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. of course, my typical what if thoughts come in terms of what if I have a really bad low blood sugar and I pass mm-hmm. out in my hotel room alone, mm-hmm. Which I know, as you know, a diabetic of 4 years now, I know in reality there's typically, knock on wood, quite a few thresholds to reach before something like that would happen. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm super bionic and I have a Dexcom that will hopefully properly alert me and anyone else that I am dangerously low once mm-hmm. I get to a certain point. But things go wrong.
Oh, and absolutely. Yeah.
As someone who is ridden with anxiety, most of the time, not like most of the time, but like with a history of anxiety, adding diabetes on top of that history of anxiety is like a whole new playing field, mm-hmm. if you will.
Absolutely. Well, it gives us like more ammo. There's like more ammunition for like to fuel our anxiety. Because we have concrete things. It's like, oh, I was just generally anxious, but now I have specific things to be anxious about. And I think for anxious people, somehow having that like real problem to be anxious about is in a weird way sort of comforting. I think it sort of justifies your anxiety better than like being anxious about these general bizarre things that possibly could happen in some scenario. So the anxiety is valid, obviously. These are like real things to be worried about and be concerned about. And I think what you're feeling is like so, I don't want to say common, but I think for diabetics, it makes sense. It's like very relatable in that imagining, oh, this one time when I'm all alone in this hotel, that's the one time I'm going to have an unbelievably dangerous low.
On a work
low.
Trip, which would exactly. also be like super awkward and embarrassing on some level.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what I do in those situations is I break it down so simply, like, what are the odds, just statistically, what are the odds that, you know, that something will happen on that night? You sleeping alone in that hotel, what is making it different than you sleeping alone in your bedroom? And you being alone in your bedroom while your twin sister is, you know, right next door in her room, if you were having a dangerous low, would you even be coherent enough to yell or to really say something that would grab her attention any more so than your Dexcom alarm would, you know? So I always try to break it down, like, what is this hotel night? What is really making this different than what it would be like at home? And listen, sometimes like forcing that reality on you or forcing these facts on you, that doesn't necessarily change the anxiety. But I think it gives us more, you know, rational thought. Yeah, a different perspective. And you're more able to rationally think, okay, realistically, what are the odds that this would happen? And I think, you know, obviously there's all sorts of anxiety management, you know, tips and tricks you can try, deep breathing, meditation, etc. But I think in this sort of situation, especially when it's diabetes related, for me, preparation is the best way to manage my anxiety. So if this is your specifically your biggest concern, like being alone in a hotel room, having a dangerous low, what are things you can put in place to prevent something from happening? And I think, you know, we're lucky.
All the juice.
We're lucky in this day and age that we have the tools and the technology to have some sort of, you know, thresholds, as you mentioned. You know, you have your Dexcom, you have people sharing it, you know, the Dexcom share. So I think by making a list of people, you want to make sure their apps are active and, you know, connected to your Dexcom before you leave for your trip. Have all the low snacks next to your bed. These are things that you can control and that you can do to prevent something from happening. And I know for me, that really helps with the anxiety, just knowing I've prepared in every possible scenario.
Right as we're in the middle of talking about Dexcom, mine buzzes because I just had two big chocolate squares without giving myself any insulin. So, LOL, I just went a little high.
Mm-hmm. And listen, that happens.
It alerted me.
Yeah, it alerted you.
That in itself is telling me everything will be fine.
Yeah, but, and obviously, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to be like, I have been a little scorned lately by my G6 in terms of, listen, it's not perfect. I know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's technology. There's margin for error everywhere we go, which is what's so scary to think about a closed loop. Whoa, I think I just had a stroke. A closed loop system with something that's obviously not perfect. Mm-hmm. But I think it was last week. It was probably last weekend. For those of you who follow us on Instagram, you might have seen my video. I had a bad low and I was like talking like I was drunk, story of my life with bad lows. But follow us at pancreas_pals to see day to day. But I had a bad low and my Dexcom didn't catch it and I had been feeling super woozy. And I thought I was just really dehydrated. So Dexcom was saying I was 95 and I was like, hell yeah, I'm killing it. Everything's great. And I had a really bad headache and I was like, okay, let me just keep chugging water. And it was like before dinner, like 30 minutes before I was going to have dinner or something. So I didn't want to eat anything. And I didn't think I needed to because it said I was in the 90s. And I didn't get the shakes like I normally do. Finally I was like, you know what, I feel like I'm gonna pass out, like I need to check my blood sugar. And I'd had at this point I had a little snack and I was like, maybe I just need some protein or something. Mm-hmm. I had made myself a super low carb smoothie and I was like, screw it, I'll just have dinner later. Mm-hmm. And I had half a banana in it, so it was probably okay. That was like all the grams of carbs, so it was like 15 grams of carbs. And this is a half hour later that I'm still feeling super woozy. Mm-hmm. And I finally checked my blood sugar and I was like, I had just hit 60. Mm-hmm. So I had been a lot lower before mm-hmm. that, because it was 30 minutes after having the banana. And I was like, oh my God, I've been burned by my Dexcom. Like, how could you do this to me, my one true love? And mm-hmm. so, I mean, it happens. It but does. I was so,
and I think...
Yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of shook your trust in the technology. And I think that's something that, you know, obviously this is a complete generalization. There's no stats behind this. But I do wonder if those of us who are like old fogies with the diabetes dealing with this before the technology, I do tend to trust my body more than I trust my Dexcom or even sometimes my meter. Like, I'm convinced my meter is just not correct sometimes.
Same. Which is bad. But sometimes it's not correct. So
sometimes it's off. Yeah, I'll do it twice in a row and it'll be like 30 numbers different. So I think it was a lesson. And I can understand that, but always remember this is the exception, not the rule. This is the anomaly.
I feel like
anomaly.
We're talking about he's just not that into
exactly.
you.
Like, this is the exception, not the rule. This is an outlier, the anomaly.
Emily's anomaly.
And, you know, all you can do is really prepare as best you can. I think... Well, I lost my train of thought, but I remembered it. I don't, at least for my body, and I think a lot of diabetics have this experience, but when I'm stressed, my blood sugar goes up. So I think realistically, you know, this is more facts to add to your toolkit, but realistically, you'll probably be running higher that when you're traveling anyways, because travel is stressful. You're stressed about being alone. Like, realistically, you'll probably be running higher anywho.
Well, the actual logistics of traveling, mm-hmm. I always go low. But then when I'm in the new place, like, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm working and running around and stressed, I'm sure I'll be a little bit higher and eating a lot of barbecue because I'm going to Memphis. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure
everything you'll be eating well.
Yeah.
And this is all evidence. This is all stuff to show you, like, look, I've done this before. I know I go low when I'm in the airport or when I'm traveling, or I know this happens when I do this activity. And this is all stuff to use as evidence to kind of, you know, fuel how you want to manage the trip. You have all of this experience, and it's not – you shouldn't be kind of negating any of that. You should be using it to your advantage to better understand how to prepare for something new or different.
God, I should hire you. I mean, I have, if my therapist is listening, she's actually type 1 and she's amazing. And we talk about dealing with things like this. So
yeah,
I have another type, amazing type 1 medical professional in my life, mental health medical professional in my life. But yeah, I mean, these are all true things. And when I look at how far I've come, you know, just in the last 4 years, because I was diagnosed as a junior. It was the summer in between sophomore and junior year of college. So, I mean, I was 20. I went to, oh my God, now that I'm thinking about all these things, I'm like, wow. Okay, so I studied abroad in London, like 6 months after my diagnosis. I thought my parents were going to kill me.
That's crazy. Like, that's amazing. And you did it.
2 days after my diagnosis, I came up to New York. Mm-hmm. For an internship at Marie Claire. So it was like insane to me.
You know why? Because like ignorance is bliss in some sense. You didn't know what to be nervous about, or you didn't know to be concerned about all of these things. So in some ways it was easier for you because you're just like, whatever, I guess this is this new thing. I have to figure it out. But like, you didn't even know all the factors to be worried about. So you were able to disconnect and just live your life, you know?
Very true. It's a, I don't know, it's just, it's a lot to think about.
Oh, for sure.
But like, also in a good way. I mean, to any listeners, once we post this episode, if you've had your fair share, definitely share it. But this kind of goes a little bit with wearing your medical alert ID. Like, there's steps that you can take.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry,
which reminds me, I like never wear mine. I should.
Yeah, if you're gonna be a pancreas fellow, that's actually not true. That's not true. You I'm like have alienating to wear a medical alert.
Listen, I wear my Apple Watch pretty much every single day, unless it's like a special occasion, and I have it set. Thanks to Kendall, the sweet librarian on Instagram, if anyone follows her, but she showed me how to do it. Where my main watch face says like Miriam, my age, and says type 1 diabetic. So I like to think that,
that
like
is your medical ID.
Exactly. But there are really cute ones now. Listen, when I was like a little kid diagnosed, there was only one type of medical bracelet. It was like the clunky, thick, big chain. It was so ugly. Mine was uglier than that. Emily's showing me her bracelet right now, and hers is like somewhat dainty and cute. Mine was like really ugly.
I'm sure it was amazing.
So I think it traumatized me.
Utilitarianism is in.
These ugly bracelets, and I remember mine. Maybe it was because I was so little and like couldn't figure it out, but like it never came off. I thought that you had to like take a chainsaw to cut it off my wrist. I swear to God, it was like stuck on my wrist forever. I did everything, slept, showered, like everything in that bracelet. But now there's so many cute ones, and there's something on Instagram popped up recently. It's like really dainty.
There's like Lauren Shop ID.
Maybe it's that. It's really pretty bracelets.
Aware causes, highs. Yeah.
You know what? My fiance was asking me what I wanted for my birthday, so maybe I'll say this. How sad.
That's actually, I feel bad about that. I didn't mean to shame you into that being your birthday present.
No, it's so true. But this is perfect for travel. Like, you should be wearing one of those. What else do I do? I know for me, the most stressful part of traveling is actually the preparation and packing. So I literally, and I know a lot of diabetics do this. I sometimes wonder if I'm doing it to an extreme, but I pack like 7 times more supplies than I know I'll actually need.
I do too.
Because there are times, and I'm sure we've all had it, for those of us who are on the pump, where you put on a pump site and something's just like not right. It doesn't feel right, or it's kinking, like something's just not good. So I pack like 800 pump sites, enough for essentially every possible diabetic situation. I pack syringes, and this is all based on experience of trips I've been on where something went wrong and I didn't have what I needed. So I actually happen to have like a backup pump, one of my old insulin pumps that still technically works. So I always travel with that pump, with some like two sets basically, or two sites that I would need on my old pump. I also always travel with syringes just in case. And
I do too. What about Lantus? Mm-hmm. Do you bring Lantus in a Humalog or Novolog pen as well?
It depends. If I happen to have one in my fridge, I will. I try to always have a Lantus available just in case. Yeah. But then I kind of convince myself, I'm like, okay, so what are the odds that my current pump won't work, my backup pump won't work, and that I'll have to be off a pump for long enough that I would need Lantus in addition to just my Humalog. So
that's true. That
is like a maybe for me.
Well, for me, my whole thing is like, yeah, I play what are the odds game, but then I realize like the it's odds of being diagnosed when you're type 1 when you're 20 was also really low.
So the odds are never in your favor.
I was like, let me see, and I'm a twin, and there's just so many different things. Like,
it's true. And honestly, if it's something easy to throw in, like at that point, throwing in one extra vial of an insulin, it's not going to add much to my...
And the pens really aren't bulky at all.
The pens are like, they're bulky thin. And they're easy. So at that point, it's not worth the anxiety. And that's kind of how I live most of my life. Like, if it's easy to add this thing in or to alter this one thing, it's not worth the anxiety to not do it. So do whatever makes you feel content and comfortable and safer.
100%.
I'm all about it. I always travel with my glucagon, which is like the most ironic thing because I never, ever carry it around with me.
Are you
in my
serious?
Day-to-day life. No.
Okay, so I think this is a huge difference between like people who were diagnosed as little kids mm-hmm. versus people who were diagnosed in later teens or early adulthood.
Is this based on like your case study of people you've
just
chatted
people
with?
I've chatted with, and I feel like I'm turning into the face of diabetes of just in general, but also like I feel like I've turned into the face of being diagnosed in your 20s, but I did this to myself, so I guess I welcome it. But I don't go anywhere without my glucagon. I literally bring it upstairs to the gym with me, and it's because, well, also now that I'm saying this out loud, it's truly just because I'm neurotic, but
and that's okay.
I mean, my thing is like, I don't want worst case scenario, something bad to happen and not to be prepared.
Absolutely.
But you're so in tune with your body. You're so used to, I guess, managing the disease. I mean, what are your, you just don't care anymore.
Don't
you don't need it. Like,
I mean, now I feel like I'm like jinxing myself because I've said this,
oh God,
but I've had this disease for 22 years. Never once have I needed a glucagon.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. And I do feel more comfortable now. Like, listen, this was the years before Dexcoms. The meters literally, I tell people this and they're like, what? It took 45 seconds for your meter to tell you what your blood sugar was. You put the drop of blood on and it would count down from 45. Like, it, things were just so slow and different there. And I feel like nowadays we have a Dexcom that's always monitoring you. And even though it's not super accurate, I do feel that the arrows are accurate. So you, if it's trending down, I do tend to believe those arrows. So if yes. I have the Dexcom plus my gut of feeling, like knowing how I feel and knowing like, okay, this is saying I'm 95, but I don't feel great. I guess, I don't know. I don't think about it much, but I don't think that I need the glucagon. And then again, thinking like, through every scenario, I'm like, what are the odds someone, I will pass out on the street and someone will even be able to figure out how to get that thing to work.
If you're wearing your medical ID. Oh, the thing to work. There's pictures. There but is. Yeah, it does. It looks very overwhelming.
I have read some articles. They are trying to find a more glucagon that's more similar to like an EpiPen. And I know that's in the works.
It's an unstable chemical when you combine it. So it can't be
pre-mixed. Yeah. But that's what those scientists are working on, which I think would be great. But like, it's a very complicated thing, and I know my like fiance or my family would be able to figure it out because they
your
would know what the problem was.
Your fiance is a doctor.
I know, but I showed this to him. I was like, "Have you ever used this?" He was like, "I've never seen anything like that." I'm like, "That's great."
That's because they probably just have to add it to the IV drip or something.
No, or like the nurses do it. Like he doesn't have to do it. Who knows?
Steven, brush up. You're becoming a Mrs. Seriously. You're the Mr. Diabetic now to your fiance's Mrs.
But I know now. I'm like, I'm curious what the pals, we should do a little, after this episode posts, we should do one of those Instagram surveys. Like, do you carry your glucagon around with you?
I think, I'm very interested to see. And I mean, we are a little skewed. I think we have around 18% of our followers are men versus the rest are female. Oh, so
that'd be intriguing. I would love to do like a full blown study, like, How does your gender affect your perspective and like emotional wellness around diabetes?
I feel like emotional intelligence, like Corinne on The Bachelor. Yes. This is like, on some level, I think, like, let me just say that wearing your medical ID, bringing your glucagon, these are not things that you have to do. So anyone who's listening and is either newly diagnosed, has been diagnosed for a long time, or is a caretaker, friend, loved one, whatever, mm-hmm. of someone who's type 1, and they don't do this, this is not the end of the world.
Oh my gosh. These like, listen, just... even Emily and I don't agree. Like, I don't wear a bracelet or have a glucagon. Emily does, and it's we're both fine. We're both thriving in our lives. So
yeah, we're it's completely
personal. Yeah, completely personal preference.
I mean, these are just, in my mind, steps to help me manage my mm-hmm. anxieties, my parents' anxieties. Like,
exactly.
There are steps in a direction to make sure I'll be okay, but it doesn't mean that that's going to necessarily save me in a situation. It doesn't mean that it's a must-have. So everyone manages their disease differently, and at the end of the day, we all have the same broken pancreases. So it is what it is. And,
it is
you know,
what it is.
Leave a comment. Let us know what you think about carrying a glucagon or a medical ID. I mean, mine's become like a must-have accessory for me. Like, mm-hmm. I just have had it on literally since I was diagnosed, and I just don't take it off. I mean, I'm sure if it fell off or if I forgot to take it off, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. But like, it's just, I just don't take it off. So it, mm-hmm. it's just not something I think about. Yeah. And I have a glucagon in every single one of my purses. So, because they accidentally, wait, this is actually a really fun story kind of to end the episode on, if you will.
Oh, do
tell. It has to do with glucagon. So for those of you who are listening and don't know, I am a fraternal twin. Laura and I, that means have the same birthday as twins do. And I am a type 1 diabetic. Laura is not. And I had to reorder. My glucagon's expired like a year ago. So the doctor put in a prescription for me at my local CVS here in New York. And I kept calling, and it like a few days had gone by and I hadn't gotten any notifications mm-hmm. that they had filled it. So I called CVS and they were like, oh, we never got that prescription. And I was like, here we go, the usual. So I call the doctor, my doctor back, and she's like, that's so weird. We definitely filled it, but we'll fill it again. And I was like, okay, I believe you. Like, CVS has burned me in the past, but so have you. But, like, still, not her specifically, just, like, the medical, the prescription people. Anyway, so I go, I finally get a notification that it's been filled, and I go to pick it up. And I'm like, oh, while I'm here, I'll be a good sister, and I'll pick up my sister's prescriptions as well. So I pick up all the prescriptions, and I'm like, what the hell did Laura get? Like, why is her stuff equally as heavy as mine? This never happens. So I come back to the apartment, and I open up my stuff, and I realize when I took stuff out of the bag that Laura's prescription on her bag said 2 glucagons. And then I took mine out, and mine said 2 glucagons.
So CVS, I have 4.
So no, yeah, so now I have 4 glucagons.
Which is amazing, because those guys are expensive.
It is amazing, and luckily it already hit my deductible at this point in the year.
Perfect. I was going to say, I should rearrange that. I always end up getting mine in January, so I have to, like, pay. Yeah. They're like $165.
They're ridiculous.
You killed it. Nicely done.
But except for the fact, of course, me thinking, oh my God, this is so irresponsible. Could you imagine if they had given this to someone else who thought, like, maybe it was an elderly person or a caretaker that thought that they had to give this shot to someone. Geez. And, like, my sister is not diabetic. She should not be prescribed a glucagon. That would literally kill her.
You think it would, like, raise red flags for the pharmacist being like, why is this girl who has no other diabetic medications
getting this? And they filled it. They filled it. That's so funny. And I'm so confused. Like, to this day, I'm like, how did this get... Listen, I know human error exists, and I know things happen, and things get passed or overlooked and things like that. But thank God it was me who picked this up and not, like, some other girl with the last name Goldman in the system, because that's, like, the Smith of Judaism, and, like, everyone would get a glucagon.
That's amazing. Listen, I chalk this up to being a diabetic win. I always say we don't get many perks in this world, so when you get one, this is, like, nice. You
take
beat the
it
system.
And run with
now
it.
Now you have one for every purse.
Thanks, CVS. Yes, very true. So I have, like, my travel glucagon. I have one for my winter purse and then 2 for my 2 summer purses. It's great. But anyways, this has been another episode
of Pancreas Pals.
Oh, amazing. So be sure to continue tuning in, everyone, this season. We will be having a round of guests, and we have a big announcement at the end of the season as to who will be taking over as a co-host with me next season.
Dun, dun, dun.
I keep saying
Doesn't
season
it feel
like 5 times.
It feels like a competition show, like American Idol or something.
Tune
like,
in next
who?
Week.
To Vote. Find out who our next, like, Food Network star is. You know,
oh, my God,
like
we
that.
Could. I should have done, like, I should have let the Battle pals the vote for the next co-host. Oh, my God. Maybe we'll still throw that in, but then, like, plot twist, you have to listen to the episodes to know that this is a fake news situation. But follow us on Instagram at @pancreas_pals, and we have a very full rest of the season. We miss Christy, but not all is lost, and don't worry, guys, we're still going to be coming at you with a full, I'm just repeating myself, with a full season.
It's going to be good. We've got special guests. It'll be awesome. I'm pumped.
Oh, my God.
Pun intended.
Yes. Long live the dad jokes. All right. Have a great week, everyone, and be sure to follow our Instagram for latest updates, and come back next week for more fun. Have a good one.
Bye, guys.